Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Stretch run of Grant and Danny with you until 6:30 here on The Fan. Looking forward to Nats baseball. They are in Texas for the first time since 2005. Bustin' Loose Baseball got a brand new episode dropping tonight. We interviewed Dave Jagler, one of the voices of Nats baseball. And what's funny is we didn't even talk about the team at all. We talked to him for over a half hour. It's about his career and just calling games next to Charlie and being in the booth, play-by-play. It was a lot of fun.
Really, really cool stuff. Among my fondest sports memories is you and I, because there's no seats for us. There's no place for us to be in Houston for the World Series. So Charlie and Dave, while they're working, you know, their pinnacle. This is their, forgive me, my bad parlance here, this is their Super Bowl. It's a World Series. This is their World Series. And here you and me and Bob Carpenter, elbow to elbow, 3 feet behind them, stuffing our faces nervously like fat slobs while they're calling play-by-play of, you know, game one wins, Kurt Suzuki homers, this, that, and, you know, Strasburg shoving the whole nine yards. Just an unbelievable experience. But watching those guys work, and you and I have been in the booth with them a couple different times, and then watching them work that World Series, just maestros, absolute, just perfectionists, studs, stars, whatever, you know, hyperbole you want to use about how good they are. Really, really cool. So we kind of pull back the curtain to go deep dive on Jags' process.
Yeah, traveling with the team and prepping and what's around you while you're calling a game and how do you set up your play-by-play board and all kinds of fun stuff like that. So if you're a fan of the behind-the-scenes and broadcasting at all or the Nationals and you listen to Charlie and Dave, I think it'll be a really valuable podcast for you. Bustin' Loose Baseball episode number 14, I believe it was, which drops tonight when we get off the air here on G&D. Let's go to Kevin in Arlington, wants to hop on Kevin and talk Wiz with us before we move along. Kevin, what's good?
Hey, brothers. So you got to go all the way back to 90, 91, the last time we had a superstar in Washington playing round ball. His name was Bernard King. He was the other half of the Ernie and Bernie tandem at Tennessee in the late 70s. He averaged 28.4 points a night. He was third in the league, only behind Jordan and Karl Malone.
And that's post-ACL Bernard King, Kevin, yes, I might add.
That is correct. And it took him 5 years to get back to being that dominant stud he was before 85. Anyway, he was the oldest all-star to ever start based on that year. He was phenomenal. And that's the last guy, boys. Now, as for where are they in town? After this week, they might be ahead of the Commanders. I don't know. I mean, of course I kid, but, you know, I think they're fourth, but unlike the Commanders, well, here's what they're like. Neither one of those teams has been in the Final Four of their league in 30 or 40 years. And they're in their respective leagues, the last teams to not get back to a Final Four.
Did they make the Commanders' lack of a conference final, Kevin, look like it's only been a couple hours?
Just a little losing streak.
You got to go back for the 70s for this org.
Hey, I'm so old. I was a junior in high school when the Bullets won it. So, and I remember it well. But I will say, if they would just try to tank and do what Danny says, and that is trade everything away, keep getting draft picks, and position yourself for a lottery player. If they ever hit the lottery, I think they could win again. I think they'll win before the Commanders win because I think the odds are they could get that great player who would be the magnet. But they need the great player, to be the magnet to then build around it.
So I think there's no chance that they win before the Commanders, and here's why. The NFL allows for the magical carpet ride for the team that isn't in the club of the elites that the NBA does not allow for. You cannot win an NBA championship if you're not one of the top few teams in the sport. It just doesn't happen. You have to be one of the teams sitting at the table. You know, one of the you get the jacket if you're in the club, so to speak. You got the superstars or you don't. You got Steph and Draymond and Klay as your trio, or you don't. You have LeBron or not. You don't get to be in the Eastern Conference Final. The NFL, the Eli Manning Giants go on their run. The Joe Flacco Ravens go on their run. Decent teams, like wild card teams, routinely beat better teams on the road a couple of times. Next thing you know, you look up, you're in the conference championship.
Yeah, Cincinnati beat Kansas City.
That is how it's going to happen. The Bengals this past year, the perfect example. Well said. The Commanders at some point are going to have that year where they're 10-7 or they're 9-8 or maybe they're 11-6. Sounds crazy because they haven't won 11 games since I was not able to speak yet as a baby. But they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to rip off a couple of games. The next thing you know, it's the NFC Championship game and they're knocking on the door. The freaking Bengals were in the Super Bowl last year and were an unbelievable drive away from winning the title. The NFL, it happens. Basketball, it doesn't.
So here's my counter to support Kevin's point. I would generally agree with you because fluky stuff happens. 2012 Ravens is another great example of that.
Generally, that was the Flacco Ravens.
Yeah, generally it's the overdog, but you know, a lot of times it's the team that gets hot. Basketball takes one player. You get Giannis in the middle of the first round, you all of a sudden are a finals contender. Jokic is a second rounder.
Get that player.
It takes one. The Commanders don't win playoff games. The Commanders don't do anything right. It takes one player that you luck box your way into.
I would say that you have to be drafting at the top of the board to get that guy almost all the time. And they refuse to allow themselves to do that.
Generally, that is the practice. Although, again, the last two MVPs, Jokic and Antetokounmpo, outside the lottery, both guys. But generally, your point is correct.
Who went after Otto Porter when he went third? What I'm wondering is how often do they
have they missed it?
Because sometimes, like, yes, you draft Jan Vesely and you could have had Kawhi. You could play that game plenty. But the NBA draft is also really weird in that there are plenty of years where there's like five great players in an entire NBA draft. And there's 10 players that, beyond that that are decent careers.
Who are you looking for? The 2013 draft after Otto?
Yeah, so Otto went third. Who were like the next five guys?
This just happened when they're in the top three. Terrible draft.
And that happened, but the NBA.
Kwame Brown, it happened to them too.
NBA almost, I don't want to say all the time, but there's a lot of years, a lot more years than any other sport where there's like, you know, 60 guys get drafted and seven of them end up being really good.
So it's Cody Zeller, Alex Len, Nerlens Noel, Ben McLemore. Stop me when you find a star.
Yeah, these guys stink.
Yeah, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. The best player to go in the lottery was C.J. McCollum. Really good player. And that's the year Giannis went 15th.
But even C.J. McCollum that year doesn't change the fortunes of your organization.
No.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're better with him, but your point's right.
There's plenty of years like that where they took Otto. They could have taken someone else. The Kwame year is another great example. It's Eddie Curry and Tyson Chandler. And I remember like really liking Shane Battier coming out of Duke, and he went sixth, I think, that year, if I remember.
Someone needs to take a charge.
That draft stunk to have the number one pick.
It stunk. Now, Pau Gasol was the best player there.
Pau Gasol, I think he go third or fourth?
Went third, and the story was that Jordan didn't want to go abroad to scout him.
So was it Eddie Curry 2, Tyson Chandler 4?
Kwame Brown 1, Tyson Chandler 2, Gasol 3, Curry 4.
Who was 5 before Battier went 6?
Won a dunk contest and participated in a three-point contest later.
What team?
Mostly known for Golden State. Went to Michigan State.
Jason Richardson.
Nailed it.
Jay Rich.
A baby.
So he was a good player.
Really good player.
But it doesn't change the fortune of the Wizards, but had a hell of a career compared to Kwame Brown, for sure. Ryan and Alexandria, you're on Grant and Danny.
Hello, my good friend. Let me lead with, I am a stage actor. I'm getting ready to go into work and act in the show Shakespeare in Love about how Shakespeare writes a play.
You mean Christopher?
Yeah. Well, yes. Christopher Shakespeare.
Christopher and Christopher Love?
Shakespeare. Christopher and Love. A-N-D Love.
Yep.
Really I love the play. Wizards. I love the Wizards like Christopher loves Shakespeare, and I will never not love them. I remember watching Gilbert come out through the trap door they made over in the corner for the playoff game that I went to with his back to the audience and his thumbs facing his jersey, and I was like, the crowd was going nuts, and I was like, I'm in love, this is it for me. I'm really interested by Tommy Shepard's. You know, I love his stuff so far. I'm really confused by it at the same time. It's a really bizarre situation for me. I could go on about that. But my bigger point is I'm confused about what it takes to develop NBA talent, because I know that the other teams managed to draft people like Kawhi and Giannis and all those other things late. And these players, were they going to develop no matter where they landed, or were they going to develop in that system? Because I know that we get like Otto Porter is like, okay. And then he goes to Golden State and they use him perfectly in his role.
So this is the billion-dollar
question. It's the question.
Great call, Ryan. Thank you. Have a wonderful show tonight.
Break a leg, bro.
I wonder if he's at the Christopher Theater Company right over by Capital One Arena.
Yeah, that's one of the most famous theater places.
I love that, Christopher.
Christopher, what's his last name? You want me to say Columbus?
Have a good show. Break a leg.
You want me to say Christopher Columbus?
No, we don't.
We don't.
No one said we wanted you to say
that. I swear we don't.
We never wanted you to say that. But that is a great question. And I think it's something I think about all the time. If Jordan Poole was on the Wizards right now, did he become Jordan Poole? I don't think he does.
I always say no.
It's a chicken or the egg thing. Now, part of it is you're on a great team, and that helps you be great. See Juan Soto right now, having his worst season in the big leagues. Still outstanding, according to most of the advanced metrics, like slept on because people are saying, oh, he's hitting .215, when batting average is one of the least important things there is offensively at this point. Having said that, he's on a terrible team without a lot of good help and offensive prowess around him, and he's worse. We were talking about this young guy from the Pirates today named O'Neal Cruz,
yep,
who I really, really like. My point was, if O'Neal Cruz was a Toronto Blue Jay, I'd love him a lot more for the next 3-4 years as a fantasy baseball player. He's a Pirate. It makes it really hard to be a star when you're a Pirate because there's not enough help around you and guys that are buoying you in the lineup. The more good players you're around, the better you become. That competition helps. So bringing it back to the Wizards, is Jordan Poole really good because of the Warriors and Steph and Clay and Draymond, or would Jordan Poole have become Jordan Poole anywhere? It's one of these great sports debates. Irrefutably, part of it is playing with the Warriors because they're bringing the best out of you. But what would he be as a Wizard? And I would say it's like a lot of guys that have come through here. You know, like,
yeah, I mean, but think about Grunfeld's culture for so many years with Poo in the Shoe, and we're tearing up suits and guys, you know, Andre Blatcher spitting in the face of being a sixth man on a playoff team. And like, there was this sense of entitlement and guys weren't getting better. And that was always sort of something. That's why I give Bradley Beal a lot of credit for at times rising above that and relentlessly working on his game and turning himself from a guy that, you know, averaged 15, 16 a year on an okay team to someone that could lead the league in scoring, pretty much doubling his average and all the different things he's worked on to improve, turning himself into a third-team All-NBA player. He rose above that culture here. The flip side is, because you're so starved for that kind of talent, are these guys, you know, are they enabling stars to sort of be, you know, to walk all over them? You hand you the golden key right away first day. I don't know. I do know that doesn't feel like they ever unearth the gem, right? Where's their where's their Draymond Green, the guy that they could have drafted but sold that second round pick for cash? Where's that?
Let me ask
you
this.
It never happens.
Do they draft Otto Porter to be a star, or do they know? Because I'm not a scout, and it takes me to watch Otto Porter 5 games, and I go, Otto Porter is a complimentary Craig. You know what I mean?
He's fine.
They're not drafting him at 3 because he's some unbelievable player, but we just went through the draft class. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot there. Luka Doncic was the 3rd overall pick.
Yep.
That's what it's going to take, is just one of the years where they go 2 or 3 or 4. The industry was a little bit wrong on someone, you know, and they get Luka. That's what is going to have to happen, I would say. Brad's in the Outer Banks. What's up, Brad?
What's up, Brad?
Hey, man. Hey, Grant, real quick. We go to this particular beach access, and they got this house. It's right there. The pool is right off the house. It's right on the beach. You got an access that goes up a set of stairs. It's got a tall deck. The deck has the hot tub on it, so you're basically looking down at the beach.
Sounds pretty amazing.
And you can sit on that deck at the hot tub and just see your family on the beach. And I just thought, you know, it's like a perfect scenario for you, right? Like,
he could do that, right, Brad?
Nothing has ever sounded better. That is silly.
You can just sit there and watch him. You don't even have to go down there. You can just sit there and watch him.
But right. Give me the address. I'll rent it out. It sounds amazing.
It's like $12,000 a week. You know,
I will not rent it.
He'll totally do that, Brad.
Hey, look, my only point real quick is, so your tanking kind of scenario, and this is the thing about the NBA, is that when you tank in the NBA, you're still dependent on a ping pong ball to kind of build yourself back up. You know what I mean? Like in the NFL, if you suck, you're going to get a top five pick guaranteed, maybe the first pick. You guaranteed you're going to get one of those guys. In the NBA, it's just really tough to do this whole wipe it out and start over because you don't have a guarantee you're going to be able to get good players. You could be stuck in that ping pong era where you're just getting meh players. And lastly, dude, if you ever have 30 minutes, the Washington Wizards are literally the worst drafting team in the NBA history. If you ever want to look at their history, they have drafted just horribly.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's amazing. It really is.
It's honestly hard to – thank you for the call.
Yeah, they put on a clinic.
It's quite literally difficult to do what they've done. I remember a stat, and this is now so dated, so I don't remember the specifics, but it's something along the lines of – it was at the end of Ernie Grunfeld's time as their GM. And he was here for close to 15 years, right?
Yeah.
He had been a GM for, I think, twice that long or
close
to it. I think
it was 16 seasons,
but
I think.
Close to 30, 25 in the NBA, all told.
Mm-hmm.
He had drafted two All-Stars, ever.
Michael Redd and John Wall.
I think that was the list. It was like John Wall was 1-1 who my mom would have drafted if she had the pick. Because it's just what you did. You got the pick, and then you draft John Wall. And the other was Michael Redd, who, kudos, tip of the cap, was a second-round pick. But that's what I remember about that stat that just always blew my mind. It's like, this is the guy that's been making the picks for us?
Well, I mean, it's hard to draft an All-Star when you trade the pick to Phoenix. But, yeah, I mean, we know the history there. The point about just, you know, you get stuck waiting for the ping pong ball, that's only part of the rebuild. Again, tanking has such an ugly word because it means, like, to a lot of fans, it means guys are, like, purposely throwing the ball out of bounds or, like, punting it in the stands instead of taking a shot. That's not what it means. It means that when you've got somebody that somebody else wants – and you're sitting there, and you're going to lose 50 games, it means you trade them, so now you lose 55, and you have a future pick. You stockpile assets. And some of those assets, by the way, are players. And sometimes those players turn out to be good, and they're part of the furniture. They're part of who makes you good. So, yeah, you're dependent on being great by, you know, winning that lottery that gets you, you know, your John Morants or, you know, somebody that's truly transformative, et cetera, at the top of the draft. There's a whole other part of the process that they certainly never did under Grunfeld, and I'm not sure if they're doing right now under Tommy Shepard. They're looking like they're about to give Bradley Beal $250 million. They've got Kristaps Porzingis. They're going to get a veteran point guard. That doesn't sound like a bottoming out team to me. That doesn't sound like a tanking group to me. It sounds like a group that's going, we see a path to a 7 seed. I guess that's the point.
All right, let's get to the Nats. They play the Rangers. Normally, interleague play, it was exciting because the rules were different for a few days. So the Nats would pick up a DH here in Texas, or if the Rangers came to Nats Park, we'd get to see American League pitchers bat, which they had never really done, and so they looked goofy. Now, with the DH in both leagues, it has taken away from, you know, the few-day oddity of having different set of rules based on the ballpark you're in. I still say massive net win for baseball. I think it's better offense in the pitcher-to-DH transition is obviously up. And there's more times where you can get up and go to the bathroom and not have to worry about it because a pitcher's hitting and collectively they're going to bat 079 for the season.
Well, especially because pitching's better than it's ever been. You know what I mean? Stuff's not getting any less nasty.
I'll repeat what we say a lot on this show, which is how does anybody hit ever? Everyone's throwing 98 with nasty breaking stuff.
20 inches of run. I don't get it.
You can throw average fastball velocity 97.5 with three average pitches, and you're like the 19th prospect in a good system at this point.
You're pitching midweek at Clemson.
Josiah Gray toeing the rubber for the Nationals tonight as they kick off their series with the Rangers. Now, my fascination with Gray has originally been just to see what he looks like in the big leagues for the Nats, and we saw that last year.
Mm-hmm.
Then I wanted to see if he could establish more consistency, which he has done. The next phase for me now for him is, this is a big league starter. This is a long-term solution in their rotation, so that's great. Where does he slot in? Is he a 3.5, like a 3-4, where he's going to have a 3.8, 3.75, 4 ERA, be a six-inning-at-a-time guy who can compete? Or could this be a real horse? Could this be a number two type starter where he's going 7 innings and punching out 10 from time to time? Is that the upside? Is that the ceiling? I still think he's going to have to further develop, both by way of throwing more changeups more consistently, but also, you know, getting more swings and misses with his fastball, which at times, you know, his best pitches are his curve and his slider.
Yes.
And interchangeably, depending on the start, those can be some of the best pitches in baseball that night. Like, he'll frequently have a slider that gets swings and misses or a curveball if that's the pitch he's rolling with that night. that gets swings and misses at an alarmingly high, ridiculous rate. I mean, really, really impressive. But oftentimes, that's not the case for the fastball. So I'd like to see him miss more bats with that pitch. And we're still seeing plenty of starts where he throws 2, 3, 4 changeup. So he's just not quite consistently
comfortable with it yet.
Yeah, I'd say feeling like it's a pitch he's confident in.
And it's, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a dominant pitch. No one's saying it's got to turn into Johan Santana's changeup or you know, Tyler Clippard's. But it's got to be enough to get guys off of what you throw. You got to have something that goes on a slightly different plane. And again, it doesn't have to be filthy. He's got to find a grip, find a release point, and just and find that feel for it. I mean, he's very much, you know, somebody that's power stuff coming straight downhill at you. And it would be do wonders for him to get kind of a different look. So all of a sudden that 94 plays like 98, 99, especially when it's four-seamer stuff kind of towards the top of the zone. But he competes. I love how athletic he is generally. And that's kind of the new, I don't want to say it's in vogue because you still, you know, if you can throw a million, they'll sort of find a place for you. But the fact that he's athletic and, you know, comes from a position player background usually bodes well for someone being able to kind of repeat their delivery and, you know, generating velocity even without kind of being all armed. You're using your body a little bit more than someone that's, you know, looks like an octopus walking on land. So there's a lot to like, and I'm with you. I wonder what the ceiling is for Josiah Gray. The more sample we get, the more we find out.
What do you care about Nats-wise here in the weekend and then weeks ahead? What kind of things are you tracking?
Luis Garcia, for me, hitting, because it's new and it's exciting, it's fun. I want to see the league get their scouting reports, and I want to see the advanced reports against him. And okay, here's how we're getting him out. Can he expand? You know, can you start taking your walks a little bit? Because the first go through here over this his first month up here in the show, he's hitting everything that moves. Well, he's not walking very much, right? I mean, he's walked, I think, one time since he's been up in the big leagues. Guys will get you out by making you throw balls. I can't wait to see that. I want to see Keiper Ruiz continue to hit. That's exciting for me. I've been thrilled with him behind the dish. And I want the guys that I think are going to be traded to catch fire. That's kind of the what I'm rooting for on a nightly basis.
Yeah, so I think that the last part I'll start with, Josh Bell, Nelson Cruz, getting other players like Cesar Hernandez maybe going, who might have a chance to be traded. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, even, I don't know what they're going to do with, say, a Tanner Rainey or a Eric Fetty. But, like, those types of guys who I would move because they've got some controllability, so there might be some value. I think that's how you're going to get something back on this market. You're just not going to get what you want typically anymore in the way of prospects. And so you're going to have to get rid of guys who you don't want to because you might be good in 2 years and maybe Rainey could still be here.
Mm-hmm.
You can find relief pitching. You might be good in a couple of years and maybe Fetty will still be here. You can find a fifth or fourth starter like Eric Fetty. I would move those guys if they could get me something back. So just seeing those players play pretty well, I think that's important for me as well. But you didn't mention Juan Soto, and every time I get to watch Soto is a gift, like the rest of us. I love the guy, and I'll always kind of lock in when I see him on TV as I'm walking past. It's time to stop everything I'm doing. But it has been a really tough year for him.
Yep.
Just little things are annoying. Like he ran into an out the other night where he stopped at second and then kept going to third, and he got thrown out by Austin Hayes, and it was just bad base running. It's bad baseball. And I think parts of his game are trickling over. You know, Davey was having to challenge him about hustling.
Yep.
And yelled at him about not running a ball out. I know he's got a barking knee, which doesn't help, but it's just not ideal. You know, you want your best player, who's one of the best players in the game, to have, even if he's having a down season, like the routine good things said about them. And it's just been tough to watch Soto struggle the way that he has as a guy who's always smiling. He smiled a lot less here lately.
Yeah, this is a grind. I mean, again, I obviously never made the major leagues, was never close, but I played on some bad teams. I had some long summers, man. When you look up and you're already down 7 runs before you have your second at bat, it's just hard to stay focused. It's hard to maintain it. You know, you try to do whatever you can to have some fun, but your numbers suffer and everything about it does. This is not what he's used to. He came up, you know, what's unusual for a teenager or a 20-year-old to come up into a winning situation. Usually you come up into this and you try to, you know, overcome the culture and figure out a way to win more. But he came up with a veteran group that, you know, they hit the ground sprinting, and he was sensational right away. But yeah, just he hadn't looked right, hadn't looked comfortable, and some of it's been terrible luck. I mean, some of the, you know, his batting average on balls in play is comically low. That's not sustainable. Some of those hits will start to fall in, and the average is going to go up. He's not going to hit .214 for the year. But even with all that said, it just doesn't look quite right.
Couple of notes based on Rizzo. I think talking to reporters today, I saw this on Mark Zuckerman's Twitter account. So they've got three high-end prospects that kind of separate themselves from the rest of the system. Cade Cavalli, Cole Henry, and Brady House. Cole Henry's got some shoulder soreness, and he's always got something going on, it seems like, with the arm, unfortunately. So right now, he's been he's not going to be shut down, but they're skipping him. And then Brady House is on the injured list. He's got back soreness. He's being shut down for a week or two. So not exactly great updates when those guys aren't 100% healthy.
And no update on Strasburg, right? We don't know anything? Nothing else new there?
That's to be expected,
yeah,
I would
say. Yeah, it's TBD.
I kind of always expect them to tell me nothing about Steven Strasburg.
For months at a time. And then when we ask.
For Darris and Ryan, Grant and Danny saying so long. If you want more Nats chatter, you can get it from us on the podcast we do, Bustin' Loose Baseball. Go to thefandc.com to podcast the show we did today. We are back Monday at 2 o'clock. Thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.